Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Did you ever take banned substances to enhance your cycling performance?
Yes.
In all seven of your Tour de France victories, did you ever take banned substances or blood dope?
Yes.
Two snippets from the beginning of Lance Armstrong's much-anticipated confession to Oprah Winfrey, part one of which aired last night on her OWN network. So what did you think, folks, and why do you care? Call us at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Let's talk about Lance Armstrong, sports and cheating, broader implications for American culture, how this relates to his Livestrong work or not, fallen heroes, the press and their failures, and see where it all takes us. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehr Show. We'll also mention the Manti Te'o fake girlfriend case. And joining me for all this is NPR sports correspondent, although I might have to start calling him NPR sport and scandal aficionado, Mike Pesca. Hi, Mike.
I'm on the hoax beat.
So were you one of those people like I was last night who had to go to your cable box and figure out, do I even get the OWN network and where was it? And I wound up watching it on Time Warner Channel 862.
Yeah, it's the only network that has a higher number than the networks that actually play the Tour de France now. You know where I saw it? I saw it a couple of steps away from your office because I was in WNYC because I'm going to be talking about it on the media this weekend.
All right. So,
how about that?
So I'm going to play for, you know, there must be maybe 1.5 people in the audience who did not hear that first 60 seconds. So I'm going to play this first 1 minute, which had the string of yes-no questions about his doping and Lance Armstrong's answers. Here it is.
Did you ever take banned substances to enhance your cycling performance?
Yes.
Yes or no? Was one of those banned substances EPO?
Yes.
Did you ever blood dope or use blood transfusions to enhance your cycling performance?
Yes.
Did you ever use any other banned substances like testosterone, cortisone, or human growth hormone?
Yes.
Yes or no? In all seven of your Tour de France victories, did you ever take banned substances or blood dope?
Yes.
In your opinion, was it humanly possible to win the Tour de France without doping 7 times in a row?
Not in my opinion.
So, Mike Pesca, we learn, if nothing else, that Oprah has not lost her genius for media because there's no way to play those Lance Armstrong sound bites without hearing more of Oprah than of him.
That's an interesting – I didn't think about that. What I did think is that it violates a principle of good interviewing. Like, I have to tell you about this. But, okay, let's talk. You know, we're supposed to ask open-ended questions in general. It gets better, more detailed answers. But in that case, violating it and laying the groundwork for what exactly we're talking about, you're not going to have to watch. And at the half hour, we'll be able to piece together what he said, what and when. I thought that was excellent. And I thought that was masterful. And I thought it laid the groundwork. And by the way, that alone, that is such huge news. We expected him to say it, but since he never has, and she put the news right up top. So I thought that was a really good job.
I agree. And it was riveting at the top there. But as it went on, Armstrong left many questions unanswered, even in the things that he said. Were there important questions you think he evaded last night?
Well, yeah, I don't think he skillfully evaded so much as I'm incredulous at his claim that he never doped past 2005. And as he said many times, why would you believe me about this claim? Why would you believe me, to cut to another one, that there was no quid pro quo between the donation I gave to the International Cycling Union and them finding, you know, favorable findings on my blood test. But, you know, he said that he believes in the biological passport, which is this new way to detect blood doping. But then he said, The obvious follow-up would be, if you believe in it, why did it never detect that you blood doped? And his answer would have turned out to be, because I really didn't after 2005. I think a lot of experts would have a hard time believing that.
Let's take a call. Richard in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Richard.
Yes, hi, good morning. I love your show.
Thank you.
I just wanted to look at the broader scope of this. One thing that Lance said last night was a win at all costs mentality that he had. And I think that that is very much endemic in our culture today, in our society with respect to business. I don't think we should leave him out twisting in the wind as this horrible, evil person. If you want to look at just the financial institutions of how they left tens upon tens of thousands of people homeless and broke. He's not a local drug pusher pushing heroin to school kids on the street corner, you know, to be labeled as this drug trafficking image of a leader of a cartel, I think is a little bit harsh.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about those. You put some important questions on the table here. And, Mike, we are talking about sports and who wins a race. So I guess in the moral pecking order scheme of things, right, he's not out there peddling drugs to kids directly. On the other hand, you could argue that he sets an example, and it's precisely children involved in youth sports or as they grow up through high school sports and college sports who are potential victims of this because they see the greatest athletes in the world, some of them doing it.
Yeah, well, put aside the symbolism. Let's just say that you have a 9-year-old who wants to get into cycling, maybe because he admires Lance Armstrong. Under the Lance regime and his generation, it would be impossible to flourish to a world-class level without doping, if the Lance Armstrong way of doing things were allowed to stand in place. So it was necessary to do what USADA was criticized for as, you know, being extra legal or having an Inspector Javert-like zeal in going after this. You know, Armstrong would always call it a witch hunt. But all that was necessary if you want to clean up the sport. Now, that's just one sport. And Oprah didn't do this interview. She didn't do the interview with Mark McGwire when he admitted to steroids. That was done on the Major League Baseball Network. And she doesn't do interviews with, you know, any baseball players or someone where the issue just is the sport that he plays. It's that Lance Armstrong is this transformative cultural figure. And I come back to the Greg LeMond quote, the only American to win the Tour de France now, who said, if Lance did it legally and without cheating, it's the greatest story ever told. And if he did it with cheating, it's the greatest fraud ever perpetrated.
Right.
And it is a great fraud. And it's a fraud that goes beyond a guy cheating in sports or even anything relating directly to bicycling and only bicycling.
Here is Armstrong from the interview talking about his will to live after his testicular cancer and his willingness to cheat.
When I was diagnosed and I was being treated, I said, I mean, I will do anything I have to do to survive. And that's good. Mm-hmm. And I took that ruthless and relentless and win-at-all-cost attitude, and I took it right into cycling. And that's bad.
What'd you think of that clip, Mike? I thought that was a fascinating moment in the interview, and that he was trying to make the case that they're two sides of the same coin, you know, the determination to live and the determination to win, and his inability to say, I'm not sure that I completely bought it, but it was a fascinating connection.
Yeah, tease it out, though. I'll destroy cancer by using anything at my disposal, and I'll destroy anyone who comes in my way of winning a race. I thought that it was an entirely self-serving statement, but I also think that Lance Armstrong may actually literally believe it. You know, it's sort of like saying ambition. I just have ambition. Well, if your ambition causes you to make money and, you know, pay a lot of taxes, that's fine. If your ambition causes you to kill your rivals, like some of these words are not virtues in and of themselves, such as drive. And that statement really made me think of the Daniel Ariely book about cheating. And in fact, I went to it and started tweeting out some passages. He wrote this book. He's a researcher at Duke, and he talked about the psychology of why people cheat. And passage after passage relates directly, it seems, to Lance Armstrong's psychology. And that one is one of those justifications, you know, that you take something that's a virtue in one world, beating cancer and you apply it to a ridiculous degree in another world. And I'd also like to know, what does beating cancer really mean? I mean, I know that there's a psychological component, but it's really entirely different. You don't train to beat cancer. Act literally go on a bike or do exercise. I mean, there's so many ways in which the analogy falls down. I mean, I know the word is beat, like you beat your rivals and you beat cancer, but it's really very different.
Right. Well, I don't know that I'd completely dismiss it in that respect. I've never been through it, but I know people who have. And, you know, you can go on a harsher chemo regimen that's going to give you a better chance of survival, but you really have to be strong to withstand it and other kinds of things that you can do. So maybe there's a certain kind of analogy, but still, he made that leap to take it into sport. But Mary in Huntington, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mary.
Good morning. My son has followed, well, we all have followed Lance Armstrong from way back. My son is 24, was a professional cyclist, and he was a junior national champion. He had been approached more than once about doping. We always suspected that Lance Armstrong doped, and it is a superhuman sport. They are asked to do things that nobody else in sporting is asked to do, and I think that's one of the reasons, and it is win at all cost. It's what have you done for me lately?
Mary, thank you. And on that note, Mike, one interesting thing to me last night was Armstrong's assertion that he thought it wasn't cheating at the time because most competitors in the sport did it. And that's not to excuse it, but it does raise a question about context. If you're an athlete who might be the best without drugs, but others are passing you because they use drugs, and it seems like the norm, there is something much bigger than Lance Armstrong's personal character at issue here about cycling, isn't there?
Right, but we're not coming down on Tyler Hamilton's character or Floyd Landis's character, and we don't say that Lance Armstrong is of a questionable, substandard character just simply because he doped. It's how he did it. It's the vociferousness in which he combated anyone who dared question him. He was vicious. He would try and seek to destroy his rivals, destroy anyone who questioned him. There's, you know, in a dozen Oprah interviews, you'll never get to the making amends portion for every journalist that he shut out because the journalist associated with David Walsh, who Oprah quoted a couple times, who was telling the truth about Lance. Of every nearly anonymous rider on the tour who he sought to crush because the rider would say something about the tour being dirty or Dr. Ferrari being dirty. I mean, the zeal that he pursued this, and I don't know that Oprah is going to get into it, but I think that that is a great question. Why couldn't you just deny it and leave it at that? Why the extra aggression? I mean, and the answer is, I guess, it's because of his personality.
Right, and he really did not seem to me so forthcoming about that last night, and we'll see if Oprah on her own network tonight pursues that any further in part two. But let's take another phone call, and let's see who's up. It's JoJo in Brooklyn. You're on the air. Hi, JoJo.
Hi, Brian. How are you doing? You have the best show in the country.
Thank you, sir.
Well, what I would like to say about Len Armstrong, I don't believe he should bear the punishment by himself, because this is happening too many times. The sports organization, they should make sure that these guys are clean. And you have, for an example, at the Summer Olympics, where all a bunch of Jamaicans, they win the track team, they win a lot of stuff. And Jamaica is an island that have drugs all over in the government. It seems like drugs is their resources. So I don't believe all these Jamaicans win fair and square. So a lot of people need to be checked out. And also, there's a sport organization who's in charge. They need to check if these guys are clean. Because I believe, in fact, Len Armstrong, I don't even think he should bear any punishment. Because he went 7 times. Nobody find out that he was doing drugs.
Well, he and thank you, JoJo, admitted that he didn't think it would be possible to win 7 times without the drugs. And I don't want to cast any aspersions on the, you know, Jamaican Olympics teams or anybody else without any evidence. But with respect to cycling, Mike, what happens to cycling now? Does it go the way of boxing? You know, now that all this is emerging about how prevalent doping is in the sport, will it become a discredited sport that nobody cares about anymore? Not that anybody cares about it already.
Right. It was before Lance a European sport, and I don't think Americans really became fans of cycling. The ones that did, but not in general. They were fans of Lance, and it could go back to that place. And the Tour de France actually has a rich history of always having substances interlaced with those mountain stages, from strychnine to cocaine to, you know, just alcohol along the route. But where it literally is going is it's getting a little slower, which means that a lot of people think that the anti-drug efforts are working. If you look at the times of those mountain stages, they're getting a lot slower, and teams that are literally avowedly, and everyone really believes that they are anti-drug, these teams are able to field, you know, competitive riders. So I think it's getting better. And to contradict what the last caller said, it's because they're doing things like busting Lance so aggressively. Everything that USADA and these organizations were most criticized for, not giving due process, you know, it's not a court of law, and they allowed him to answer whatever questions. But that was the necessary step to take to clean up the sport.
On our Facebook page, Mimi writes, because we want to feel like we are capable of doing great things in our lives, when we see people accomplish everything he was able to do and overcome extreme adversity, we are inspired. If he's just another cheater, that's really a hope killer. And that's certainly one of the pieces of fallout from this for many, many people. We just have a couple of minutes, and I want to spend them on the Manti Te'o case. Hardly at the level of the Lance Armstrong scandal, but the other buzz of sports fans right now. ESPN did a 2-hour show on it yesterday, somebody told me. So a Notre Dame football star, a runner-up for the Heisman Trophy, which goes to the best player in college football, even more sympathetic for the deaths of his mother and girlfriend during the season. Grandmother and girlfriend, yep, during the season. And now we learn the whole girlfriend story may have been a hoax. Is it clear whether he is the hoaxer or the hoaxy?
It is not clear. It is Notre Dame and Manti Te'o's story that he is purely a victim. We know that there are a couple of statements that he made where he referred to his dead girlfriend after he realized that there was a hoax. By his own timeline, he learned about it on December 6th, and on December 8th, he was still making references to "my girlfriend had cancer." But there are a lot of ways to explain that. Like, he panicked. He didn't know how to process it. It was even just essentially a slip of the tongue, since he so often would say "my grandmother" and "my girlfriend." I think it's possible, I'm not going to render a judgment, it's possible that Manti Te'o's version of it, that he was the victim the whole time, it's possible that that is true. If you go over all his public statements, he actually never talked about meeting his girlfriend in person. His father made that reference, but Manti Te'o never did. And Brian, I think the Lance Armstrong story and the Manti Te'o story are actually related, because it has to deal with myth-making in our culture. What Manti Te'o was, the reason that this story was reported and reported so often, was it was part of the myth of the brave football player soldiering on in the face of tragedy. People didn't even stop to question, wait a minute, mm-hmm, your story is that your girlfriend who you loved, you went to practice instead of her funeral, and everyone lauded that? That wasn't even questioned at the time. And if I could quickly quote, this is Tommy Craggs, the editor of Deadspin, who broke the story, who said that all the media who missed it, he kind of absolves most of them, except, he says, I have less sympathy for the folks who crafted those painstaking love story and cleats features about Manti and his dead girlfriend. Those were dumb, infantilizing stories to begin with. They were executed poorly and sloppily. Mm. If there's any lesson to be drawn from this, it's the kind of simpering, he says, caca, should be eliminated from the sports pages entirely. A lot of those kind of stories also tied up with what we thought about Lance, what we thought about Joe DiMaggio, what we think about a lot of our sporting heroes. It's myth-making on some level.
Good point, and good points about the media. Just give us your 15-second Mike Pesca viewer's guide to watching part two on OWN Tonight with Lance and Oprah.
I checked the transcript. The word "live strong" did not come up in part one, and I think that's what they're going to talk about. His family, his children, his loss of sponsorship, but really where his cancer foundation goes from here and where the anti-cancer cause goes from here, and if he heard it.
NPR sports correspondent Mike Pesca, thanks so much.
Welcome.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, Chinese activist Chen Guangchun. Remember his dramatic escape through the U.S. Embassy in Beijing last year? Well, he's now living in New York. Chen Guangchun in a rare interview here right after this.